And tonight, it's inspired by Joe Biden, President Biden, who just passed his one-year anniversary in office. And I have a feeling Joe is not celebrating very much. His political agenda has mostly been stalled, and his popularity ratings, as you probably know, are hovering at all-time lows. He made lots of promises on the campaign trail on his way to being elected, and most of them have not come to pass. But what I want to do is focus on the promises he made regarding Palestine and Israel and where they stand. James Zogby outlined them in an article that's linked at the Tangents website, which is tangents.com. Thank you, Harry, for posting them. There's a Gaza Corner section at the playlist link. You can find it in the left-hand column, the Tangents playlist. And James Zogby wrote an article in The Nation titled "Biden's Pledges to Palestinians, a Year of Disappointment." Zogby is an old-timer. He was involved in negotiations with the Biden team, but he actually has been doing this as far back as 1988. And what he does is help to insert language that shapes the Democratic Party's platform on the Middle East. He often does not get his way. But he was pleased this time around that Biden was willing to insert some language that had not been allowed previously in the Democratic platform, such as the phrase "equal worth and value of Israelis and Palestinians." And the platform also condemned Israeli settlements. Zogby points out that the principle of conditionality, which would tie U.S. political and economic assistance to Israel on its policies in the occupied territories, that failed to be included. And in James Zogby's words, quote, "The absence of this conditionality is the reason the Biden administration has been unable to deliver on many of its other campaign pledges to Palestinians," unquote. The Biden 2020 platform stated the following, and I will quote, "Joe Biden believes in the worth and value of every Palestinian and every Israeli. He will work to ensure that Palestinians and Israelis enjoy equal measures of freedom, security, prosperity, and democracy," unquote. The reality is Biden's status quo approach to Israel and Palestine actually deprives Palestinians of equal measures of freedom, security, prosperity, and democracy. The platform included some other promises. Here's one, quote, "His policies will be grounded in a commitment to a two-state solution where Israel and the future viable state of Palestine will live together in peace, security, and mutual recognition," unquote. Anyone who visits the West Bank will learn that de facto annexation is already a reality. The two-state solution is dead. Yet Biden clings to this empty rhetoric. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett doesn't even buy into the two-state illusion. Bennett publicly opposes the creation of a Palestinian state, which contradicts the very next promise from Biden, quote, "Biden opposes any unilateral steps by either side that undermine a two-state solution." He opposes annexation and settlement expansion and will continue to oppose both as president, unquote. It's one thing to say you oppose annexation and settlement expansion, but it means zilch without action. And there's been no action. Israel continues to significantly expand settlements in the West Bank, and what was historically Palestinian East Jerusalem, but more and more it's becoming Judified. Bennett also announced plans to, quote-unquote, legalize a number of previously, quote-unquote, unauthorized settlements. This, of course, is intended to make impossible the establishment of a viable, independent Palestinian state. At the same time, James Zalbi points out, Israel continues its system of Palestinian home demolitions and has not acted to prevent the horrific spike in organized settler violence against Palestinians. Last October, you may recall, I covered it in a part one and a part two on Gaza Corner on October the 23rd and 30th. You can go to the Gaza Corner archive at the tangents.com website and dig more into what I'm about to talk about. But last October, Bennett's government designated six of the most vital Palestinian human rights organizations as terrorist organizations. They did this without substantiating any of its claims. Their goal is to dry out the international funding, especially from European countries, that these NGOs get in Palestine. This would be the equivalent of the United States declaring the ACLU as a terrorist organization. State Department spokesman Ned Price initially reacted by stating, quote, "We believe respect for human rights, fundamental freedoms, and a strong civil society are critically important for responsible and responsive governance. The United States will be engaging our Israeli partners for more information regarding the basis for these designations," unquote. Sounds a little promising, but since then, the U.S. has been more or less mum on the subject. And you can read more at the Gaza Corner section of the playlist tonight. There's an article. The title is Israel's New Secret Document Still Fails to Tie Palestinian NGOs to Terrorism. Biden did keep one promise, quote, "President Biden will take immediate steps to restore economic and humanitarian assistance to the Palestinian people consistent with U.S. law, including assistance to refugees, work to address the ongoing humanitarian crisis in Gaza," unquote. What Biden did was reverse Trump's cancellation of $360 million in annual humanitarian assistance, which in the context of giving aid, it's just a tiny fraction of the $3.8 billion with a B Israel receives annually, and another $1 billion was just thrown in to replenish Israel's Iron Dome defense system, although it's really the Palestinians in Gaza who absolutely need the Iron Dome missile defense system. The next two promises appear to have already been abandoned by Biden. Reopen the U.S. consulate in East Jerusalem, which served Palestinians. Trump closed it in 2019. And the other promise, which is going nowhere, is work to reopen the PLO mission in Washington, D.C. Some believe the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1987, passed by the U.S. Congress, prevents the reopening of the PLO mission in Washington. But former Assistant Attorney General, Office of the Legal Counsel under Trump, Stephen Engel, wrote in a document that I dug up and linked at the Tangents playlist. It's called Statutory Restrictions on the PLO's Washington Office. And the key line is that Engel wrote, the Anti-Terrorism Act of 1987 may not constitutionally bar the PLO from maintaining its Washington, D.C. office and undertaking diplomatic activities the Secretary of State wishes to authorize, unquote. Yet President Biden appears unwilling to reopen the Palestine Liberation Organization diplomatic mission in Washington, D.C. Khaled El-Jindi of the Middle East Institute tweeted, quote, "If you needed proof that a two-state solution is dead, here it is. If the U.S. can't even muster up the will to reopen its own consulate, how does anyone imagine this or any U.S. administration will convince Israel to divide Jerusalem, hand over all or most of the West Bank, and evacuate at least 200,000 settlers, unquote. Not only has Biden failed to deliver on all but one of his promises, but during the past year, the conditions for Palestinians in the occupied territories has significantly deteriorated. You may recall last May, Israel bombed the hell out of Gaza. It was horrendous. It also raided the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem, which is the third holiest site in all of Islam, and has continued its ethnic cleansing of Palestinians throughout the West Bank and East Jerusalem amid a sharp increase in settler violence against Palestinians, both in Palestine, in the occupied territories, but also inside Israel. Meanwhile, I believe Biden really thought that he was going to reopen the U.S. consulate in Jerusalem when he said so during the campaign trail. And this is the consulate that would serve Palestinians. But he underestimated Israel's outrage at such a move. U.S. Department of State official Brian McKeon suggested that the U.S. needs Israel's permission to reopen the consulate. Quote, "That's my understanding, that we need the consent of the host government to open any diplomatic facility," unquote. This was during a congressional hearing last October. Palestinian Prime Minister Mohammed Shetayeh believes differently. He stressed that the U.S., quote, "does not need the permission of anybody," unquote, to reestablish the diplomatic mission. It's clear the issue isn't political. I mean, I should say, it's clear the issue is political. It's not a legal question. It's a political question. You'd think the U.S. would have some leverage giving Israel $3.8 billion a year, but apparently not. Israel calls the shots. Quote, "The government under my leadership has repeatedly clarified its position that there is no place for a Palestinian consulate in Jerusalem." This is Prime Minister Bennett speaking last month. Quote, "Jerusalem is the capital of one state, the State of Israel, period," unquote. This is largely symbolic but hugely important because the Palestinians would see the reopening of the consulate as a political signal from Washington that it still views the holy city as a disputed issue. A Palestinian state has always envisioned East Jerusalem as its capital. Israel captured the eastern part of Jerusalem in 1967, and it annexed it in 1980 in violation of international law. A group of U.S. lawmakers met Prime Minister Bennett last September. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy was among them. He tweeted, "In our meetings today in Israel with Prime Minister Bennett and other officials, we stressed the importance we place on reopening our consulate in Jerusalem to better serve Palestinians. This consulate was open for over 100 years before being cruelly shuttered by President Trump," unquote. But Murphy's group is no match for the Israel lobby, which donates hugely to the Democratic Party and also donates significantly to the Republican Party, but less so. Biden does not have the political will to take on the Israel lobby within its own party, and he sure does not want to see big money redirected to Republicans. Of course, the Biden administration blows a lot of smoke when speaking about its accomplishments, from my perspective or lack thereof, in Israel and Palestine. During a recent press conference, U.S. State Department spokesman Ned Price said, quote, "It is undeniable that this administration has re-engaged with the Palestinian people and re-engaged with the Palestinian leadership to advance that goal of providing equal measures of security, prosperity, and freedom for the Palestinian people," unquote. Equal measure. I don't know what kind of math he uses, but equal measure. Annual aid package to the Palestinians, $360 million, most recently $3.8 billion with a B, plus another billion to replenish Iron Dome. So $360 million compared to $4.8 billion. Equal measure? Right. Juliana Amin, a co-author of a letter that more than 500 2020 Biden campaign staffers signed last May during Israel's bombing of Gaza, demanded that Biden defend Palestinian rights. And she said, quote, "Democratic voters are waiting for their leaders to catch up to an increasingly popular moral conscience on this crisis, which demands accountability for the Israeli government's actions and supports Palestinian self-determination," unquote. The reality is clear. Philip Weiss of Mondawise, which is an online news portal focusing on Palestine and Israel, he summed it up in a few words, quote, "Israel is dictating U.S. policy toward Palestinians, and the White House is simply folding," unquote.